Many of us have those stubborn pounds that seem impossible to lose, no matter how good we eat or how hard we work out. My solution is PlushCare. PlushCare is a leading telehealth provider with doctors who are there for you day and night to partner with you in your weight loss journey. They can prescribe FDA-approved weight loss medications like Wegovy and Zepbound for those who qualify. Plus, they accept most insurance plans. To get started, visit plushcare.com/weightloss. That's plushcare.com/weightloss.
Hello, beautiful babes. Thank you for coming to the Cod Pass recording. It's our last one. Oh, no, I'd give that a cheer, personally. I'm looking forward to relaxing. I've been doing the yoga. I can now do every letter in the alphabet. I'm like that woman from the Exorcist film. I can bend over backwards. I can do a U-shape. I can flick off the wall. That sounds ominous. All right, then. Should we get out our beautiful guests? Welcome to the stage, the gorgeous David O'Doherty. All right, beautiful babe. How are you?
Oh, you know. Had a breakup in the last hour, but apart from that...
Good. Let's get out in the open straight away. And also the wonderful Jordan Gray. Hello, babe. How's things?
I'm all right. I broke up with David in the last hour. And this is well awkward. This is roughly awkward.
This is going to be a sticky podcast.
We're going to work this out.
Do you want to talk about it? Should we get it out in the open, David?
It hadn't been going for... it'd been going for the summer, but we really liked each other. But she came to the fringe, and yeah, it's just 2 degrees off these things, aren't they, really?
Yeah.
And when you're 46, you know... I want to have a kid and stuff, so we couldn't just keep going forever.
No.
So we made the decision on the way to your podcast.
Oh, God. Well, to be honest, the fringe will put anyone off.
Yeah, it's a good test.
it's a good test.
It's like, you know, IKEA invent a machine that just punches a chair 6,000 times to see if it's a good chair.
Yeah. Oh, yeah.
The fringe is the relationship version of the IKEA punch
it is.
Machine.
Oh, what a lovely way to start the podcast. Where do you go from there? Well, to be honest, the only way is up. Our mission for this podcast is to make David feel like he's made the right decision. Well, you know, you feel like you have anyway, haven't you?
So far I do, yeah.
Yeah. I think the thing is with love, you know when it's not right, and you've got to give it up, and there's a little bit of hope there always, but you just got to face up to the reality.
That's quite bleak.
It's brave.
Those lyrics would never be in a song, though.
No. Well, you never know. Wait till the end of the song. By the end of the show, we'll have a breakup song that will truly put you off love forever. No worries. All comes free in the Codpast. So, Jordan, is it all going well, though? Your beautiful show?
I'm living the dream. It's like a waking dream. I had not a very good 2018 show. No one came to see me, which is normal. It's sad, but normal. I think we've sold out now, and there's talk. I can't say for sure, but there is talk of us doing a couple more shows in a... venue that's 5 times the size of the one I'm in now. I'm having an absolute dream. Thank you.
Yeah, well, that's so good to hear.
Thank you for that applause for a vague piece of information that might be a lie. But thank you. That's really sweet.
What do you think's changed, though, from then?
I'm a little bit more mature. And also, I've got a team behind me. I came on my own before, and there's a lot to be said for a wonderful team of people. We're just talking backstage. My show is being run by a bunch of Goulier-trained clowns, which means...
Oh, God, nightmare.
It's a beautiful nightmare, is what it is, because they're funny, and they've been working together for a long time. So I've entered a machine that really understands comedy. It's really cool. I'm loving it.
They arrive in a fire engine... And one of them gets out, and then another. It's just hundreds of them keep
getting
out.
That's how I film my show every night. I just pull up a clown car in front, and they all get out one by one. That's it.
So was it that you... Did you approach the show differently this time? Is the show about a landmark or something that's, you know, different or changed?
The show is about superheroes a little bit. I'm transgender. The show is called Is It a Bird? So it's like, is it a bird? Is it a plane? But also, is it a bird? I don't know. That's the theme of the show. So it's loosely based around Batman and me and how our stories intertwine occasionally. As I'm saying it, I wouldn't buy a ticket to it, personally. But it's working out. It's
I think you're selling it beautifully.
Yeah.
And your first show was 2000, wasn't it, David?
Yes.
That's 22 years.
Oh, Oh my goodness.
How's it changed? Is it?
Diane, I remember about this point in the run in 2000, there were five people in one night who'd all won tickets on a Radio 4th FM giveaway, and they all walked out together.
And, oh, my God.
And I remember it because the last one, just before he shut the door, went, "You're shite," like that, and leaving me alone in the room at the mic. And I was so, because I was 23, and it was just like, do I just keep talking? Like, what's the rule? Yeah. And the tech came down, and he gave me a hug. And he said, "Big man, let's go for a pint." And me, because we had 35 minutes to kill, me and the tech went for 2 pints. And
you came back and you sold out.
they'd all come back from the toilet together, yeah. And they were giving a steady ovation. No, but they're the lesson. I don't see how you can't. You need those sort of nights to. Yes. Well, it's more to find out: do you really want to do this? Because this is. But then the beauty of the Fringe is the next night you go back and it went okay. You know, so it's there is that thing of back on the horse with the Fringe.
I don't think there's any other career that's as horrible as this, is there, really? If that's what you've got to do to see if you're still in the game.
There's a few careers we have to keep proving you can do it over and over and over again. Yeah. Like a plumber, I suppose there's a certain expected level of expertise, but they don't have to keep coming over and showing you that they can do it. They just do it once. You're like, that person's a plumber. If a comedian does a shit gig, you go, are they really a comedian, though? That wasn't that funny.
Yeah, but I would say this, and this is the great never spoken of truth of comedy, which is it gets easier because at the start you're shite and the audience has their arms folded and they're like, this will probably be shite, and then you get better and the audience are like, oh, we like this person, like, can't wait to see this, right. And then if you keep doing it for 22 years like me, like a maniac, then you build up a crowd such that they cheer when you stick your head out from the wings at the start.
That's gorgeous.
It's very nice, and I will need it tonight when I do my show, as I try not to weep during several of the songs.
Oh, David, you won't weep, though, because I reckon it's going to work out for the best.
Do you reckon I should mention it at the start of the... No, not at the start of the gig. That'd be real. People will think it's a bit then.
You can't lead with it. Yeah. You sound like patter.
She comes out at the end and we kiss then.
Maybe you could just show the text messages on there. On the screen.
Oh, God. With what song playing? With I'm Not In Love.
Yeah, that's like the kind of thing Kim Noble... Do you know Kim Noble? That's the kind of thing he'd do, I imagine.
Yeah, I'm not Kim Noble.
And then throw a squirrel in a Johnny or something. No, that's his vibe. Kim Noble. Anyone know Kim Noble in the audience? No. So that must sound weird to you. Trust me. Look him up on the internet. You'll have the time of your life. Or you'll be just as depressed as David by the end of it. No, but he's very good. He's got a new show coming to soon and it's going to be beautiful. Do you like him? Do you know him?
Yes. Yeah, yeah. I really like his stuff. I like anything that, especially in comedy, that's poking at the edges through sheer devilment or weirdness or sincerity. Like this guy called Paul Williams, who's one of the snort New Zealand kids, who's just got a show about he loves his partner so much he's willing to convert to Judaism to be with her. And it's like no one's told him this. Maybe don't talk about this in a comedy show. And that's why it's so good, because it's clanging up against...
Is his partner Jewish? Because that's real commitment. That's a really romantic gesture.
That's the twist.
But yeah, he's willing to do that just because she thought it'd be a laugh or something.
Unless he's misheard it. I had a boyfriend once and he said, "Oh, you know that Beatles song?" I said, "Hey Jude." He said, "No, Hey Jew." And I was like, "No, that's not what the lyrics are, babe. It's Hey Jude." Anyway, that sounded anti-Semitic, but it's true. It's just the facts.
It's a very different song if they were the lyrics then.
Exactly.
Yeah.
Well, he was thick. Let's put it that way. He was a hod carrier from Billericay.
Okay.
Yeah. That makes him thick. Not that you have to be thick to do that as a profession, but you build up such strong muscles in your neck that it just slowly squeezes your brain, and then the capacity.
Stuff flows
to the brain. And then bits of brain fall out as you go. Love to all the hog carriers out there. Don't find me out. I'm sorry. So for you, Jordan, because you was really, you came, you got quite famous from The Voice, didn't you, that TV show?
Yeah, I'd done The Voice in 2016, yeah. After 10 years in the music industry. It's really nice. You hear horror stories about reality TV, but I had a right laugh. It was good.
Yeah, well, we had Diana Vickers on the podcast.
Yeah, yeah.
And she seemed quite positive about it, but I think her age made her a bit more, you know, difficult for her. But so what made you go and do something like go into comedy? What's wrong with you?
I brought out a single after The Voice. He's like, oh, quick, get a single out. But you're not allowed to release a single 6 months after you've been on the reality TV show so that you don't compete with the winner of the show. It's in your contract. So you had to wait 6 months, and then obviously nobody could remember who I was by then, which is fine. And the single that came out was shit as well. I spent so much money on it. We had about 12 producers making it, and it just was like... I was like, I wouldn't even listen to this. It's so garbage.
Was it on a label? So
yeah, yeah. It got to, this is my favourite thing about it, it got to number 114 in the charts. David Brent's fictional shit album got to 113 in the charts. It didn't get as far as Ricky Gervais's fake character's shit single.
Yeah. I made a documentary about 12 years ago in Ireland where I tried to get a song to number 27 in the Irish charts. Now, this was when it was physical copies.
Why 27?
We just thought it was a funny number.
It is a funny number. Yeah.
And so we did it by buying... You need to find out what stores were chart tracking in a given week. Right. And then you can't buy more than one within 30 minutes. So we had this loop where you could walk from this shop to this shop, which was like 35 minutes away, and then back to this, and then just keep doing it like that. And then, because we only had a couple hundred copies of it, we would then give it back to other shops. That, oh, it was a very...
Where did it go?
Got to number 30.
Did it? Oh, what a shame.
Blew it, yeah.
You needed
more
foot soldiers.
Yeah, we did it in February. So February was the... In Ireland, I don't know what the Irish music sales aren't very big, but in February, no one buys singles. So it's when, like, Iron Maiden used to have a number one every February in Ireland. So we figured this... Because you only need to sell, like, 1,200 copies or something. So... Yeah, we sold 1,100.
Because musical, I mean, there's music in your show, isn't there, Jordan?
Yes, four musical comedy songs.
So, because it's quite weird being a musical comedian, isn't it? What, did you ever try and, like, do proper music? Like,
yeah, my dad is an Irish jazz musician.
Oh, is he? Oh.
So he spent his whole life writing these weird tunes and going to New York and LA and working with all these famous people that no one has ever heard of. But in Ireland, he wrote the song you have to learn in school about how to cross the road. Right. So everyone knows him from the Safe Cross Code, which is different to your... There's more terms and conditions in the Irish version of how to cross the road. So he's kind of beloved for that. Or like, it'd be like, what's your dad do? I'd be like, oh, he's in LA recording with Spike Robinson and Zoot Sims. And be like, what else does he do? He wrote the Safe Cross Code. Legend!
Must be nice, a little bit of PRS off that, though. Do they still play it?
No, it's a it was a buyout. Jeez, how do I know this much? No, because it was for the Irish government.
Oh,
they
I
think they paid him like 300 quid in 1972 to write it, which was a lot of money back then.
Yeah.
But, yeah, consequently, because otherwise every time you sang it in school, my dad would be making 2p or whatever. So
but that adds up, to be fair.
It definitely
Look
did.
At Noddy Holder. I mean, he owns half of... Iran, apparently. Not I made that up. That's not true. Again.
Not to mention all the lives he saved. Think about that. In monetary value.
I didn't even think about
that.
He's
made a lot of money.
Yeah, because I remember the UK one used to be Stop, Look and Listen. That was basically how to cross the road.
Yeah.
But our one had 7 points on it. So I've always felt that Irish people, when they moved to London, would just be standing on the path, going through the checklist, while all the English people would just be going, stop looking, listening, and going straight across the road. Then.
Yeah, our rule is there a hedgehog waiting? That's our song. Like, there's no hedgehog. Go, it's fine.
So was there, like, musical comedians that you looked up to growing up?
Well,
or
yeah.
Was there anyone
that
inspired
right
you?
Here. But Tim Minchin, I'm a big fan of the old Tim Minchin because it's very... he sort of landed in this country like an alien, didn't he?
Yeah.
Tim? Like, it was there was this like, period of rock star musical comedy. Rock star comedians. Comedians, I thought they were rock stars. The Tim Minchin, Russell Brand, sort of Noel Fielding era. I like that whole era. I like the slick, leather, big-haired musical elements of comedy.
Yeah. For me, it was... growing up... So there was Randy Newman... who, like, you know, we best known for doing the music for Toy Story and stuff like that. His albums are incredibly weird and subversive, his own albums that he would release. And, yeah, so my there's a big crossover between jazz, people like jazz musicians, and weird comedy then.
Yeah, like
so,
Captain Beefheart is a bit, got a bit yeah, in there, isn't he?
Loads of that.
I met him once in a cupboard. Say no more. He carried that fish around with him everywhere. Let's put it that way. That sounds a game a bit spooky. It was.
So yeah, we were always listening to, you know, there's a lot of funny lyrics in, even in those old jazz tunes, there's a lot of great, funny stuff. So yeah, when I wanted to be a jazz musician, and then basically my dad gave me the "you can't polish a turd" speech when I was about 18, as in no matter how hard you try at this, at best you will be fine. So I was like, what
else?
So
did you have a band or anything? Was you a like a...
Yeah, I would have played on a lot of records of my, just my friends, pop and rock records and stuff like that. I was able to do that, but the thing that I wanted to do was that real, you know, three people just in a club making stuff up, and I was just, I was fine at it, but I wasn't bringing anything new to the party, and so it wasn't a million miles then to, you know, to write your own songs and try and do comedy. And then, like, I try and approach comedy with a similar thing where you go out and try and dick about with it every night as opposed to just do the same show again.
But it does get a bit annoying, isn't it, that you don't get taken as seriously musically, because, you know, our tunes, Milky, they're pretty good up there. But because they're, it's very hard to, I guess, put you in a category, because you're either... Because not all our songs are funny, because obviously mine are from a gorgeous back catalogue that stem back years. But they're not all funny, and some of them are quite serious and sad. But when you do musical comedy, I think you get tarred with a bit of a brush that can be a bit frustrating sometimes.
It can sometimes be the best of both. Sometimes it can be the worst of both, because you also treat it as a comedian that I find you can just get a laugh from making stuff rhyme, which comedians would sometimes throw you under the bus for, because it doesn't count as comedy. But if it's entertaining people... I went through all my songs. Somebody told me that once, and I went through every single one of my songs to check if the joke was just the fact that the two words rhyme. I got a song where I rhyme vampire with campfire, which I think is the best rhyme I could ever come up with, ever. But it is. But it's got nothing to do with the content of the song. So, the fact that it got a laugh here means I'm going to keep it in. That's fine.
Quite right, definitely. Yeah.
But
maybe we should do like a comedian supergroup, like the Traveling Wilburys.
Yeah.
But stand-up comedy. Well, not stand-up, musical comedy. I don't know who else would have in it.
Well, I was very lucky because my second Edinburgh was 2002, and I was doing a show in the Caves, which was then part of the Gilded Balloon, and the show after me was Flight of the Conchords.
Oh, wow. And then there you go. That's a good example.
And then the show after that was Humor Beasts, which was Jermaine from Flight of the Conchords and Taika Waititi, who now makes Thor and Hulk
Crazy,
to the Wilder People and all that stuff. So we became a... so I play piano with Flight of the Conchords now sometimes,
right.
And
nice.
Still in touch with that crew then. So, yeah, there was always, like, musical comedy, I definitely... Like, there used to be a line in America, which is, if you have a car, you can host. If you have a guitar, you can close. Because when you furiously strum a guitar at the end of a song, everyone claps.
Yeah.
And everyone thinks, oh, that was comedy, great. So it always had a bad reputation for those, you know, those proper comedy parody songs that there used to be much more of.
So do you, every time you do a show, so your new show, what's it called?
It's called Whoa Is Me.
Whoa Is Me. And then do you write new songs every time you do a show?
Yeah, I'm always writing songs. But then I spent the first 9 months of the pandemic living on a remote island with my 83-year-old parents.
Oh, God.
And so me and Jazz Dad were hanging out a lot, and we were making music and writing songs. So a lot of the stuff comes from that period then.
It's gorgeous.
Yeah.
So you don't, does it have like a, you know, when you're writing a show, does it have an arc, like, is there an arc in there? What's your approach, your creative approach?
Yeah, having done Edinburgh over 6,000 times now, I definitely used to try and do that Edinburgh-y thing of being, you know, ladies and gentlemen, maybe we're not so different after all. Thank you, good night. Yeah. Like, I definitely went through a phase of doing that in my 20s, whereas now I just try and throw a bunch of stuff that's thematically similar, but is hopefully funny and entertaining all the way through. And afterwards, you can have a little think and figure out if...
You do see shows where you see someone, they just do loads of little bits, and at the end they go, don't forget.
So, there's a Paddy McGuinness special on YouTube from a long time ago that ends with, he's just done some puns. I can't remember about what, but he goes, seriously, folks, knife crime is something yeah, we all exactly. have That's to it. Think about. And it's just the end.
A lot can happen in 3 years, like a chatbot may be your new best friend. But what won't change? Needing health insurance. UnitedHealthcare Tri-Term Medical Plans, underwritten by Golden Rule Insurance Company, offer flexible, budget-friendly coverage that lasts nearly 3 years in some states. Learn more at uh1.com.
When you're ready to pop the question, the last thing you want to do is second-guess the ring. At BlueNile.com, you can design a one-of-a-kind ring with the ease and convenience of shopping online. Choose your diamond and setting. When you find the one, you'll get it delivered right to your door. Go to BlueNile.com and use promo code LISTEN to get $50 off your purchase of $500 or more. That's code LISTEN at BlueNile.com for $50 off your purchase. BlueNile.com, code LISTEN.
Well, it comes to the point in the show where various people from our social media write in and they ask me a question that they've got problem with. And we as an audience as well, if anyone in the audience feels like they can help, we answer their questions. So this is number one. Dear Diane, I'm a new comedian and I'm wondering if I should come to the Fringe or not. Don't bleed and bother. No, I'm joking. Well, I don't know, it's a tricky one, isn't it?
I feel you come out of this festival, particularly the first few times you do it, 20 times better than you went into it.
Yes.
Yeah. And that doesn't necessarily mean immediately you're improved, but you see, like, it's about going out to see stuff and people just to be inspired. And then, like, I definitely remember at the end of that first show in 2000 being like, oh God, I don't know if I'll do this. Like, oh, maybe I will. You know, even though it had been tough, there was still, like, going and meeting all those people and seeing weird comedy and weird theatre.
It's like the addictiveness of like a really hot gumbo. Like it hurts. It hurts to eat it. But then you do, I've got fond memories of the most painful gumbos I've ever eaten because they'll remember the experience being like a high.
What is a gumbo? Yeah. Sorry, you lost me.
I said it without knowing 100% what it is. The one I had prawns in it.
It's, it's like a
Filipino
a
dish. Yeah, sort of, Filipino
like
risotto.
Vibe, yeah.
But, there's an addiction to it, and it does make your hometown gigs a million times easier when you go home. You return a sort of returning hero 20 times better, like you say, for sure.
Yeah.
See, it's funny, if you had a difficult show in 2018, so it was having a support network with you that made you come back?
Nobody came to see my show, which I say is fine, right? But I ended up closing the Leighton Live at the Gilded Balloon a bunch, and that's how I met all these Goulier clowns that are now looking after me in my show. So it's, the friendship nature. I like intense, quick, big, crazy gigs rather than... So I'm not like a Marc Maron of a comedian. I'm not like a sit and work things out cleverly. I'm lazy and I'm spoiled. I like things to go really well, really fast.
Yeah, join the club, mate.
Yeah.
I think there's also a thing down with the festival where, particularly when you're starting out, you meet your crew. And your crew might necessarily be the same as you, but there's something about having people of roughly the same age who are similarly a bit lost.
Yeah.
So I was so lucky to meet Concords.
Of course.
Because no one was going to their show. Their show had four people at it in 2002.
Amazing.
And Daniel Kitson and Josie Long and these
amazing
people. And they're all roughly my age. And we were all for the next few years just struggled on together to try and
figure out. But on a practical note, it's like maybe it's best that people just come up and do a short little stint, because we only came up for a week the first time we ever did it. And that cost a lot of money, but I feel like the fallout wasn't as bad because we didn't have... But then you pay pretty much the same amount of money if you plan it in advance, don't you? It's a tricky one because most kids don't have the money to come up. That's the thing if you're young and you're starting off in comedy. I don't know what this little person's story is, but it's tricky, isn't it?
Like, full transparency, I've been very fortunate that it looks like we're going to sell out the run. I'm still going to lose about £600.
Oh, yeah.
So 100% of the tickets.
Yeah.
It's not a money-making venture.
No, I mean, I've got my own venue, if we're doing transparency. You get your own venue built. You still, last year, I think, the last time we did it, we broke even, didn't we, Milky? But you still got to take a month off work, you know.
Of course, yeah.
Your co-op, my part-time job at the co-op, they've probably given that to someone else now. but no one can stack a shelf like Diane Shorty, I'll tell you that for nothing. They'll come running back.
I feel bad. I make £5 million every year from... No, I'm joking. I'm joking.
But you must be in a comfortable, bit more of a comfortable
Yeah,
position.
You definitely... You get to play a bigger venue as... You know, and then there's the nice thing where people come up to you and they've seen 10 of your shows or they've... Like, there's people where we've done the same photo outside the venue 6 times.
Oh, that's
and
gosh.
I am slowly decaying in the photos as I look at them. I do love it, though.
But it's that Stuart Lee says it, doesn't he? It's like you've got to play to your audience. If you can, that's the cleverest thing you could do as a comedian, is take an email. Because the minute you take an email, you've got that contact, direct contact with that person. Don't let anyone else take it. Take it yourself. Get a little spreadsheet and fill it out every time you do a gig. Anytime you make a contact, fill that spreadsheet out. Because that... is how you build a career, isn't it, really?
Yeah, and because I think there is a bounce. I mean, you would have noticed this with the TV stuff. There's an immediate bounce, but they're not necessarily a loyal long-term
That's
audience.
So true. Exactly. I've got 60% of my audience is kids that followed me from The Voice that are now weirdly hanging on, and now I've decided I've got an entirely new career. So you've got non-active users on your social media. So it's about filling. You want your usership to be 100% active.
Yeah,
right. And it's a bunch of kids that they were excited at the time, and now they're like, what the hell is she up to?
Yeah, but then they like that, don't they? They want to see you improve in your career, and they want to follow your life with you and say, I was there from day dot kind of
thing. Ones, the ones that do is nice, but yeah, this you're absolutely right. It's you get a big burst of excitement, and then it's digital. It's all in the ether, you know. They've not invested anything. They've clicked follow.
I mean, there's a woman in Ilford. She had a picture of me tattooed on her back.
Wow.
That was in 1986, and I tell you what, I mean, the skin cancer didn't help her, to be honest. But you should see me on the back of that, like a screen mask. Susan, if you're listening, I love you. Don't change. But, you know, wear a shirt. Dear Diane, I want to get into comedy writing. Can you and your guests give me any advice? Comedy writing. Do you two write for TV much? Have you ever... You do it a lot, do you?
Yeah, that's my main thing now. I wrote a lovely little sitcom for Comedy Central that got picked up. It's called Transaction. I'm in it. It's just me with a different name and a slightly different haircut.
Oh, good.
I'm not a trained actress whatsoever. And now it's being made by Simon Pegg and Nick Frost, and they're in it, and they're making it. It's really cool. It's really cool. So screenwriting, my advice, is don't wait for someone to make your thing. Make your thing first on an iPhone, 5 minutes long. At least give them a proof of concept rather than a script, because who wants to sit and read a script? We should. They should. It's their job, but they still don't want to do it. So make it. We made a short thing about me and a friend in the Museum of Comedy in London, sitting talking to each other. It's really funny. And then that's got me a whole commission, and my life has changed because we took the time to do that.
Oh, that's so gorgeous.
That is amazing. Wow.
Well, you got. It's a bit about being proactive, isn't it? And getting
that's
things
it.
Done.
Proactive, yes.
Yeah. Beautiful. What about you, David?
Well, I mean,
you're always on TV.
I do that countdown show.
Yeah.
I don't do it very often, but it's repeated quite a lot. So it appears like I'm always on TV. I write children's books is the other thing that I've done for longer than I've been doing stand-up. Yeah, I had my first children's book when I was 20. And I think I'm virtually unemployable at this point because from doing stand-up, you're so your own boss. It's not that I struggle to collaborate, but I just think my ideas are better than everyone else's. So you can do stand-up, and then children's books are good because I just have an editor. I'm like, what do you reckon about this? And she's like, the ending doesn't make sense. And I'm like, okay, there's a better ending. And they just get to go out. I made a series, a TV series last year for Channel 4 where I went cycling with Richard Iowati and people.
Gorgeous.
You know, so that, but that wasn't a writing. For the person who's messaged you, that wasn't necessarily a writing gig. So I don't really know about writing.
Well, writing is about, like you say, a proof of concept, isn't it? I mean, that is what writing is. And you write by your nature of being on a show like that, didn't you? Because you're writing as you go, essentially.
Yeah, I would. I've always wanted to do that people in a room thing, though.
It's a very American thing, the writer's room. And that idea is creeping over into the UK now. We've got little writer's rooms, but we've not quite cracked it yet. The romantic idea of an American writer's room, where you're up all night eating like Chinese out of paper boxes and stuff and arguing with each other. We don't really have that because we're British and we're all too polite and we sit there quietly, eat pastry, 3 meals and then go home at 5 is our
sounds heaven.
Rooms.
Sounds like heaven to me.
It's not bad. It's not
it's
bad.
Funny though, isn't it? Because it seems like this mystical, unreachable thing. But actually, you read a couple of books about writing and anyone can do it. And it's your voice, the uniqueness of your voice, which makes writing you... I mean, you can learn the structure. It's quite easy. There's loads of good books you can read. I mean...
Save the Cat.
Oh, yeah.
Grab that if you don't know anything about it. But if you really want to go in deep, you read Joseph Campbell's A Hero's Journey, a comparative book about comparative mythology throughout the world. And it's sort of basically the idea that every single story you've ever heard in your entire life throughout history for the last 10,000 years, it's all the same structure. Jesus and Luke Skywalker do the same thing, essentially, in those stories. That's what he says. And it's sort of true. Every single hero goes into a... They start somewhere, they want something, they go somewhere into a realm of the unknown to achieve it, they face an obstacle, they come back changed and with a new skill that they can use to improve the world that they've returned to. A returning hero. That's the hero's journey. And like that's Tom and Jerry do that. Like Gandhi done that.
Imagine
everyone
that
does it.
Over 10,000 pages. Yeah. But a lot more boring. That is what that book
is. Yeah, that book is a hard read.
I tried. I threw it out the window. I prefer Ross Kemp on Gangs or Andy McNab. Personally, that's just me. But it's a good one. It's good to know. What Into the Woods is a nice little book to read. That's a good little book as well. Right, one more. The final Dear Diane of the series. Can you believe it? What a show we've had. It's been gorgeous.
I think that deserves a round of applause.
I think so. They couldn't care less. No, it's been beautiful. I mean, it's doing this at the Fringe. We've never done it before. Well, we did it once in front of a live audience, but it's quite an experience. It's been gorgeous. It's been very lovely. Dear Diane, I'm taking a lovely girl out for cocktails, but
oh
I'm
God,
a pale ale.
This is so difficult for me to hear.
Oh, sorry, David. But I'm a pale ale fella. What do I do? What should I order?
Oh.
Wait, so he's upset that he's going to have to slightly amend his usual drink order in order to sleep with this woman. Yeah.
Typical man. Sounds like a pig-headed.
You can't have it all, mate.
Yeah,
but a cocktail.
But if he's a pale ale kind of person, then why not go for one of those like chocolatey, you know, just one of those milkshakey type disgusting cocktails. He doesn't have to have an old-fashioned or something like that.
Get a yop.
Yop.
What's a yop?
Can I have a pint of yop, please?
A yople strawberry thing you get in the newsagents.
Like yogurt. Wet yogurt.
You used to have to shake them.
Well, just have a pale ale and get her a cocktail. Get over yourself, babe. I mean, it's not hard, is it? I'll have one cocktail and a pale ale, please, and no one will ever ask a question about it again.
Or he could get a pint of pale ale and pour it into 12 shot glasses and just shot them back.
Yeah, or a vase. Pour the pale ale into a vase.
Is he worried about showing her up in a fancy cocktail place? Is that maybe what it is? Because that's quite a sweet thing to be upset. He doesn't want to go to a cocktail place with a fancy lady and order a boring drink. Sorry if you're into pale ale, but it sounds boring. It's got the word pale in it.
I think they've got too much time at their hands, to be honest, this one.
Sounds to me like masculinity is in crisis.
Well, God forbid I have a cocktail. Yeah. I mean, I love a cocktail. We all love cocktails, don't we?
I love a cocktail.
Do you drink much in the
fridge?
I'm
11 years sober, so I'm
you
boring,
are?
Boring as hell, yeah.
No, that's not boring, because I'll tell you what, I didn't drink for the first 2 weeks of the Fringe, and I was clear as a daisy. Then I had one, and then I was doomed. Honestly, I just wake up and stare at a wall. I had one little G&T one night. But you've got to do it. You either go either way, don't you? You either go hell for leather, or you just don't do it.
Yeah, it's and then you add into that. So Josie Long, who I mentioned earlier, is one of my best friends in comedy. So she won the BBC New Comedy Awards in 1999, and I was the runner-up. And she mentions that in every interview she ever does. And then in 1999, I won the Channel 4 Newcomer Award, and she was runner-up in the same year. So I mentioned that, and I always try to talk Josie down, that I try and say she's never gotten over it, and she always tries to say that I've never spoken to her since then, which is a lie. We're very close friends. Anyway, we're obsessed with the Pina Colada song. If you like pina coladas.
Beautiful.
And so we've taken to going... I just drink pina coladas now.
Yeah, they're gorgeous.
Whenever they're available. I don't know if they are gorgeous.
And I feel like you get a little bit. It's coconut milk, so you're getting your bit of vitamin. I don't know what would be. What would you get from coconut milk?
Selenium. Pulled that word out of my arse. No idea.
Selenium.
Sounds like selenium.
I was going to say, I love that album. It's a Lady Gaga album. Selenium.
Zinc. I bet she's some zinc in a coconut.
I bet she's mainlining coconut water these days, old Lady Gaga. Isn't it nice, though, when you hear about you talking about your gorgeous stories about your community and you've brought through comedy, and these people do stay in your life forever, don't they, and these things. They're like, we're here, and every year we meet someone new, and you see their careers either, you know, they go well or they drop out for a year, you know, and then they come back in again. It's quite romantic in a strange way.
I'm having the weirdest year. So I'm seeing the faces of people that I've seen on TV that I love are there now, and I've seen them actually reacting in real time like, oh shit, I'm doing that. Fuck, I've got to be good now. Got to be really good, because these people like that I admire, I'm in charge of making their night. It's really odd. I'm enjoying the pressure of it.
What you've done as well is that you've... Because you've got, like, 5 stars in The Guardian, wasn't it? And 5 stars in the Telegraph or another, one of those main...
I didn't want to jump in and say agree because it's, like, really arrogant. But, yeah, yeah.
That's amazing.
I don't know. I don't want to be like... I do want to correct... that's correct. And the Student and The Scotsman and Diva Magazine.
The Student.
Yeah, The Student.
Don't know that one.
I didn't want to look too far into it because I don't know if it's really good or shit. But I got 5 stars. They're from the university, so it's a really long-running paper.
Who cares, though, to be honest? Cocklepocket or whatever they're called. Oh, got 3 stars from Cocklepocket. Get over it.
Did you just riff the phrase Cocklepocket? That was adorable.
That's what they're called, aren't they? I saw one squirrel bunion. I don't know. They're all sorts.
My favorite ever weird quote was... Adam Hills had a poster here 1 year, and it said, if you don't like Adam Hills, you can't have a pulse. And I always think of someone going into, like, a greengrocer and trying to get lentils or something. Are lentils pulses? Whatever pulses are. And the person going, oh, just before they hand over the bag, how do you feel about Adam Hills?
Do you read reviews? Do you care?
No, I haven't looked at any this year. But I'm lucky that way in that there's people coming, so
of course.
But I can tell when you get a good review in a weird newspaper because a load of people in their 60s and matching raincoats come then, and they don't.
That's the real demographic to get at the Fringe, isn't it? If you can get them in, and they read the broadsheets and things like that, so that's how you get them in. Do you want them there? Yes.
It's strange suddenly having an influx of an audience that you haven't been performing for. I've got Guardian readers showing up now, which is really sweet, but it's a rude show. I love The Guardian. I think it's all right. But, like, it is odd playing to a room full of strangers that only came because... My grandfather showed up to the show. I've not seen him in a long time. He's such a sweet man. There's nudity at the end of my show. Full-on nudity. Christmas is going to be weird this year. It was there.
What was your granddad's comment at the end?
Oh, love. Well done, love. I'm heading off now. Stick around to say to me. I'm just heading off now, but I can't do his accent. He's from Leeds.
Do you have a chat with them at the end, the Guardian readers? Do you engage with them about it, or you just like bugger
I'm
off?
Nude and sweaty, so I don't stick around. I run away.
But do people come up to you and they're like, oh, I saw your show. I wouldn't have seen it otherwise, and, you know.
Yeah, it's lovely. Like I say, it's a dream. People have been proper nice. It's a weird confluence of different audiences have come together. Some people have heard I get my tits out, and they've come, and they're sitting next to Guardian readers. They're expecting something sort of upmarket, and they're all just making friends while I'm being an idiot on stage. It's nice.
That sounds gorgeous. What a time to be alive.
That's a lovely way of saying it.
It's funny because when I started here in 2000, there was no structure. Like, from a purely stand-up point of view, there was no Apollo. No comedians were doing arenas, but no comedians were doing... Izzard was the only comedian doing a theatre, and you were like, well, I'm never going to do that. So it was just this weird sort of fringe life where Stuart Lee toured around England for the year playing to 100 people, and you're like, if everything goes right, that could be my dream one day, to go to Walsall and play, you know, to 80 people.
Funnily enough, all the comedians we've had on, like all the younger ones who've just started, they all say that they, you know, they're like, oh, that's our dream. It's just to have a consistent audience.
Yeah.
You know, and just to keep playing forever. You know, and they're not worried about... I mean, maybe they're lying. I don't know. But, you know, then we're not worried about TV. They just want to keep performing this craft. Because it's changed a lot, hasn't it, comedy? It's a lot more... Well, no, it was like it in the 90s. It was a bit rock and roll. But now it seems to be a very... it's a big youth market in comedy.
It's how a lot of young people get their political news or even political leanings. They go to comedians first. It's very influential to a certain age group of society. Mm.
It's funny that as society has changed and evolved to become more progressive, like that's been reflected in comedy as much as anywhere, in a way that comedy has reacted much quicker than... theatre has reacted quickly as well, but certainly other, you know, politics or whatever, you still see the same load of grey Etonians in your parliament, you know what I mean?
Yeah.
Whereas comedy is much more...
Yeah, it evolves, doesn't it?
Yeah. In Ireland, we had these two massive referendums in 2016 and 2018 for marriage and abortion, and it was like a lot of it came through comedians, and because everyone sort of trusts these comedians and likes them and finds them funny, so comedians were able to talk about it in quite a clear way, and I suspect some people were like, oh yeah, fair enough then. That's fine.
Maybe we need that more... Well, it's difficult though, but I don't feel like young comedians want to affiliate with a political party now, do they? Because they see them all as shirkers, and which they are, dodgy bunch. Well, they are. They're all lying swines, aren't they? I've met a fair few of them in my time.
Politicians?
Yeah, politicians, not comedians. Mind you, some of them are shirkers, aren't they?
That's what I thought you were talking about. Yeah, no, these comedians.
They don't like to affiliate with a political party, do they? Because they saw what happened to, well, who was it, Frank Skinner? Labour, so was Oasis. And that all backfired on them because history rewrites itself, doesn't it, in many ways? Watch out, Jeremy Vine. is he the political fella? He is.
Yeah, here's a good Jeremy Vine thing. One year I did the festival in Melbourne, and Tim Key, the amazing comedian, Tim Key's father, they live in Cambridge, and there was a swan that was attacking people on the river, on the Cam. And Tim Key's dad went on Radio 4 to put forward this idea that the swan should be shot.
And oh, God.
He went on Jeremy Vine, and Jeremy Vine took him to pieces, because you can't go on the radio and say a swan should be shot.
No.
But listening to it was Jeremy Vine's brother, who is Tim Vine, and Bill Key's son, who is Tim Key. And they got to sit there and listen to their assorted family members destroy each other. Oh. And that's one of the best things that's ever happened in comedy.
Oh, gorgeous. Well, do you know what? We've come to the end of the show. And you know what? It's been gorgeous chatting to you. And, you know, I hope everything works out, David. I'm sure it will.
Diane, it's really cheered me up.
Oh, that's good. Really? I hope it has, because it was, you know, it was a sad thing to hear. It was the last thing you need, actually, at the Fringe, isn't it?
To come and do your podcast.
Well, I mean, some people would say that, to be honest. Well, to have something like that happen is horrible, isn't it?
Look, I know what happens now. You just have to get through the next few days and few weeks. It hasn't been going for too long, so we'll be okay, but we will, yeah. If anyone sees me for the next while, you're allowed to give me a hug and some money.
Oh, that's good. Well, we're down. If you want to come down the Flick ever, we'll have a special chair for you. All drinks on tap.
I'll be down.
Yeah,
thank you.
Of course. And obviously that offer is extended to you, Jordan, my gorgeous baby. You're probably too busy in all your extra sellout shows.
Thank you. This has been proper nice. This is my only day off, and I'm glad I got to spend it with you two. This is lovely. Three of you.
I can only apologise.
And this wonderful audience. Thanks for coming. It's been nice,
thank
isn't
you,
it?
Gorgeous.
It's been
nice.
It's been beautiful. Last one.
Well, we're sad. Chris, it's been gorgeous doing the podcast with you here in Edinburgh. You've been absolutely beautiful and wonderful, and you've been so supportive, and everyone at Hat Trick has been so gorgeous. We love you all dearly. Thank you, Diggory, at the back there. He does the sound.
Yes.
He's a gorgeous little bugger. He's been out hitting the tiles. He's got a love bite on every corner of his neck. He's having the time of his life. I tell you what, I wouldn't like a swab of him. God knows what's on there. Half the Fringe. Thank you, Trish. You're gorgeous. You've been wonderful in the cop pass. The bar staff, lazy as ever. They've done bugger all. They sit there, feet up. They're like, I want that shift so I can do bugger all. No, they're gorgeous. You're gorgeous. You know that. I love all the staff here. They're wonderful. And you, beautiful lot, thank you for coming. You've been gorgeous. Milky, normally we make up a song. But today, we're going to do a little one of our classics, aren't we, Milky? Just to sign things out. Go on then, Milky. Let's have a little bit of my favourite song about my favourite topic, me. Oh, yeah. Beautiful. Oh, come on, Duchess. From Dagenham Dock to the Isle of Dogs, Land's End to the Scuffs up top, love the Duchess. Now I've drank Chateau, Nerve but the Pap, but I prefer my water from the tap. I'm the Duchess. There's a little drip coming from the ceiling there. This is a car park normally. They thought they fixed that, but they didn't. God knows what's in that water. Probably polio. Oh. Oh yeah, where was I? I'm the Duchess. Oh, sorry, who am I again? That's right, Milky. The Duchess. What's cooking? You better press. It's been a long week. I'm the of the estuary. Cavi's a church, and this is a hymn. I don't need no chaperone. Truck it to funky on a mobile home. If this is a man's world, I go it alone. Oh, come on, D-U-C-H-E-S-S. Who am I? That's right. Duchess, yeah, yeah. D-U-C-H-E-S-S. I am the Duchess. Duchess. Now, these are the gorgeous guests we've had on the show. Every single one of them was beautiful. Every single one of them was gorgeous. And every single one of them has got the funk. Joss Jones. Celia A.B. Jen Ives. Kiri Pritchard-McLean. Laurie Patterson. Morgan Rees. Shelf. Arise Nicholson. Tiff Stevenson. This is stressful. Charlie George. Got the funk. There's a lot of syllables in some of these, and I'll get them in. Baby Lane. Got the funk. Josh Pugh. Got the funk. Jack Barry. Got the funk. Olga Koch. Got the funk. Leo Reich. Got the funk. Jack Rook. Got the funk. A Patty Harrison. Diana Vickers. Kiara Hunter. Got the funk. Mary Beth Barone. Jordan Gray.
Got the funk.
David Doherty.
I've got the funk.
Everybody, you've been gorgeous and you've got the funk. And come on, D to the U to the C to the H to the E to the SS. You are the Duchess. Yeah, yeah. D to the U to the C to the H to the E to the SS. You're all Duchesses. Duchess. Yeah, yeah, yeah. Beautiful. Thank you, my gorgeous babe, for coming on. Oh, I'll tell you what, it's been gorgeous, but I'm looking forward to not coming here at 5 o'clock tomorrow. I'm going to have a gorgeous little lion, and I'll probably watch Holmes Under the Hammer. Good night and goodbye. Oh, thank you. That was beautiful chat.
Chatting with Shirley is recorded at my beautiful club, The Flick, down in the Assembly Underground. Oh, gorgeous. A big thanks to the wonderful people down at Burke's Nest and the beautiful little music geek, Andy Goddard. Assistant producer is Diggory Waite. My beautiful little producer is Chris Jones. This is a Hattrick Copcast.
Want flexibility? Take yoga. Want flexibility with your health insurance? Check out United Healthcare Insurance Plans. Underwritten by Golden Rule Insurance Company, they offer flexible, budget-friendly medical, dental, and vision coverage that may be right for you. More at uh1.com.